Green Bay's inspection department wants to make a new hire. This person would proactively address the rat issue the city is experiencing. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're starting out in Green Bay as we delve into all things rat this hour. Patty Murray is Wisconsin Public Radio's reporter in Green Bay. She's been covering the city's rat issues. Patty, welcome to the program.
I never thought I'd be on the rat beat.
Who knew you would be on the rat beat? I mean, certainly something for the resume. How do you feel about covering the rat developments?
I am not a rat person. I can barely even look at gerbils, I'm sorry, and her hamsters. Just not a rodent person. I'm sorry. I'll get that right out there right away. I know one of your later guests will address, you know, rats aren't all bad. They make great pets. That's fine, but I'm just putting it out there.
All right. Well, setting your feelings aside, Patty, give us a sense of the scope of this rat problem in Green Bay.
Well, it's really kind of hard to get a scope on it because, you know, rats tend to come out at night. And, you know, we don't really see rats, but they're of concern, obviously, because they can, you know, spread disease. And the city's redevelopment authority last week did approve hiring a half-time city inspector, and this person wouldn't just be on the rat beat. They would also, you know, just kind of take the load off of the work for the five full-time city inspectors.
It sounds like the city inspectors have been getting a lot of calls lately.
Yeah, there have been a lot of calls about rats and a lot of concern about that, obviously. And, you know, with trail cameras now being so inexpensive, I think that's kind of contributed to the sense that, you know, we do have a rat problem in the city of Green Bay. So a lot of rats showing up on trail cameras, and the city has distributed some traps, and those are producing results as well.
Is this happening all over the city, or are there just certain parts that seem to be hot spots?
Well, a lot of the attention has focused on the west side, kind of the near west side, near downtown. I'm sure, like I said, you know, probably everybody would have a similar rat problem, but I think a lot of the complaints are coming from that part of town. And, you know, Green Bay is a very old community. We are marking our 200th anniversary this year, and rats have been with us all that time, and probably even before. So this is nothing new, but it is something that the city is working to address at some level.
Patty Murray is with us. She is WPR's reporter in Green Bay, where she has been covering the city's approach to rat issues and calls about rats. Your stories and questions about rats are welcome as well during this conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you live in Green Bay, and have you seen a spike in rats? Are you concerned at all? Have you noticed rat issues in other Wisconsin communities you've been in? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. So, Patty, personally, for you, have you seen any rats out and about in Green Bay?
Oh, no, no. No, thankfully, I have not. No.
Well, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, I was doing some Googling this morning, and I noticed I did a story back in 2012, in the summer of 2012, and the city was already addressing rats at that point, apparently. They put up some nesting boxes for kestrels. Those are birds, and they eat rodents, apparently. But I guess, you know, we're still talking about it to this day, so maybe the kestrel thing didn't work out so well.
So city officials want to hire this half-time person to get a handle on the problem. How is the city currently dealing with it?
Well, it's the inspection department. Let's see. Last year, 1,570 complaints. These weren't all rat-related complaints, but the neighborhood compliance officer had responded to 1,570 complaints last year alone, and that compares to roughly 1,000 complaints the previous year, and the previous 2 years, roughly 1,000 complaints each year. So maybe people are just reporting more things, but for some reason, the city inspection department has been responding to an increased number of various complaints.
And you looked around Wisconsin. How common is it for cities to spend money specifically dealing with rats?
Well, not very common at all. And really, you know, Green Bay isn't hiring a medieval type of rat catcher here. You know, that's not what we're talking about. It's adding a part-time employee to address various complaints. But yeah, I did call Madison and Milwaukee, and they don't have specific rat enforcers
who are on the payroll. There are private pest companies, pest control companies that deal with rats. Is Green Bay working with any of those companies to get to the bottom of this?
Not that I'm aware of, no. That would be on the homeowner to call like an Orkin, or you cited a study by Orkin earlier, and that would be, you know, obviously on the private homeowner.
Well, so when you did call up Milwaukee and Madison, both cities that have had issues are on Orkin's rattiest cities list. What can they tell you about what's going on there?
Well, not much. I mean, they just said, you know, rats are usually probably, I would say, on the top 10 list of complaints that any city, probably of any size, anywhere in the whole country would get.
So is there any kind of timetable for when Green Bay officials may decide whether to hire more staff to deal with this rat issue?
The city council, the full city council, would have to approve that. Like I said, the Redevelopment Authority Committee did approve this halftime position, but it would have to go to the full city council, and I'm not aware of when that would be put on the agenda. But I believe they're thinking they'd like to have the position filled sometime in March. So we're talking pretty quick here. And, you know, it's springtime's coming.
Springtime is coming. Let's go to Mark now, who joins us from Franklin. Hi, Mark.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. See, I go down to the lakefront a lot in Milwaukee, and I've seen rats coming out at night in the rocks down there. Sometimes they'll crawl into the garbage receptacles that are down there. But I see it on the east side of Milwaukee, at least, there are every house has a plastic garbage can, and virtually everyone, they're kept outside because they're, most places don't have an indoor storage for them. They have holes eating them. Mm. And I know the squirrels do a lot of it, but of course the squirrel isn't very much different than a rat either, except it comes out in the daytime. And they're a rodent that causes damage, and why use plastic garbage cans that are basically feeding these rodents?
Mark, thanks for the call. Patty, has Green Bay given any prevention tips to its residents?
Well, they're basically saying clean up your outdoor storage. I would assume that'd be like wood piles and whatever debris you might have around your house that rats would find appealing to live in, to make a nest or a den or something like that. But, you know, Green Bay does also have those plastic recycling and garbage receptacles. I haven't noticed any of my receptacles being chewed through, but, you know, rats, they like to chew stuff. So I could totally see that being a concern.
Well, Patty, thanks so much for joining us and keeping us up to date on this issue.
Okay, anytime.
Patty Murray is Wisconsin Public Radio's reporter in Green Bay. She's been covering the city's rat problem. Getting your stories and questions about rats at 800-642-1234. Have you noticed rat issues where you live in Wisconsin? How have you dealt with it? How has your city dealt with it? Call in or tweet us at WPR Mornings. When we come back, we'll talk with an urban rodentologist. Stay close to the Ideas Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready?
When you're on social media, visit the new Facebook page dedicated to the Ideas Network on WPR. You'll find links to the Ideas Network programs you listen to every day, information on the issues important to people across the state, and perspectives from our talk show guests. Find more online at facebook.com/theideasnetwork.
According to the National Pest Management Association, more than 20 million rodents invade homes each year. It's not too hard for rodents to get inside a home or business. Rats can enter through a hole the diameter of a quarter, while mice can enter through the hole the diameter of a dime. We're exploring the world of rats on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. How do you feel about rats? Do you have a question, a story to share? 800-642-1234. Send it by email, ideas@wpr.org. Bobby Corrigan is an urban rodentologist, scientist, and president of RMC Pest Management Consulting. That's in Westchester, New York. He was inducted into the Pest Management Hall of Fame a decade ago. You can follow him on Twitter, @rodentologist. Bobby, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks, Kate.
So first of all, what is the Pest Management Hall of Fame?
Yeah, it's very unique and not a lot of people know about it, but it's usually comprised of scientists and professionals that have been involved in trying to accomplish scientific breakthroughs in pest management for a long time.
So how did you become so knowledgeable about rats? How did you become the rat czar in some circles?
Pretty much by mistake. I had no money to go to college when I was younger. So I took a job at a newspaper ad for an exterminator in New York City. And my first job was to address rats in the sewers. And I just found it fascinating. I found them scientifically interesting. And from there, it was off to college and to study rats.
So you were quoted in that article in the New Republic from last summer with the headline, "America is on the verge of a ratpocalypse." Doesn't sound very comforting at all. What's going on?
Well, that's a good question. And the scientists are trying to figure it out. No one has a, you know, exact answer. But I think, you know, when you put it all together, Kate, there's two things probably happening. One is the winters, as everyone knows, have been repeatedly mild for about a decade now, and that's to the advantage of rats. They do not hibernate. And so if they're getting warmer winters, they can rechannel some of those energies into reproduction. And second to that is likely the fact that, you know, there's more people, more human beings increasing in our cities and towns. And, you know, with more people comes more trash, and with more trash, more food for the rat. So it's likely that kind of formula.
How quickly can a rat population grow and multiply?
Well, you know, very fast. That's what all pests have going for them in and around our buildings, whether it's cockroaches, ants, you know, mice, rats. The reason they're pests is because they can reproduce pretty quickly. So the average rat, for example, will have a family of 10 pups, and 10 pups grow quickly if there's plenty of food and shelter, as Patty mentioned earlier. And, you know, within a couple of months, they're having their own babies of 10 pups. So you have this logarithmic growth that happens very quickly if we're not paying attention.
Well, I often think that rats are just associated with very large cities. You're waiting for a subway train and you look down onto the tracks and there's a rat. But it sounds like rats are in many other places. Where are they?
Well, they tend to associate with humans very closely. So the answer to that question is almost wherever you find people, you will find rats. But it has to be said, it's usually the towns and cities of higher densities have the worst problems. But the rat also moves into rural, you know, America and other parts of the world. It associates with barns and livestock and horses and piggeries. And so the rat, very successful mammal, and it tends to be found wherever people and or their animals are found.
Well, Ron from Independence called in, couldn't stay with us. He says, the problem is that we don't let cats roam the cities. Cats would get rid of rats. Is there anything to that?
No, there's really not. I mean, it sounds, on paper, it sounds great, you know, and cats have been known to be an effective, you know, predator here and there, especially with mice. You know, but even there, many times you'll find rat infestations closely associated with in around dog pens in yards and people that have cats. You know, so it sounds good, again, on paper, but if you do the numbers and you do the studies, cats would never be able to control our urban rat populations.
Bobby Corrigan is with us. He's an urban rodentologist, scientist, and president of RMC Pest Management Consulting in New York. He's also was inducted into the Pest Management Hall of Fame in 2008. We can talk more about rats if you can join the conversation, 800-642-1234. Have you considered getting a pet rat? Why would you want to do that? If you did get a pet as a rat, what led you to that decision? What advice do you have for people who might consider one? Call in at 800-642-1234. Also, if you think you have a problem with rodents, with rats, how have you approached that? 800-642-1234. Wayne on Facebook says, old buildings plus people that don't do a good job of keeping things sealed up and sanitary equals vermin, plain and simple. So, Bobby, is that equation right?
Yes, that's an excellent equation, and I agree 100% with Wayne. You know, many times when people say, well, we've spotted some rats or a rat increase and maybe we should get a pest control and poisons. The bottom line is when you see rats, that's a relatively large mammal. You know, each rat consumes from 1 to 2 ounces every single night. So if you say you see a family of 16 rats, that's 1 to 2 pounds of food going down those rats every single night. The bottom line is, where is that food coming from?
So take us back in time, if you will. When did rats arrive in the U.S., or were they pretty much always here?
Well, they weren't always here. The rat, we call it the Noi rat, but it's actually from Mongolia, part of the planet. And the current, you know, estimates is the rats arrived on the eastern coast of the United States somewhere in the mid-1700s. On ships, especially perhaps supplying the American Revolution from England. And from there, and this is a testimony to how successful they are, they arrived mid-1700s, and now they are found throughout the United States. Some came in from the other side in San Francisco and Seattle, but they've pretty much infiltrated the greater portion of the United States. So they've only been with us, you know, a couple hundred years.
I found it so interesting in reading the history that after 9/11, they were putting down rat poison around the World Trade Center. And what was going on there?
Well, the fact of the matter is not much with the rats. There was a concern, and we were involved in surveying that area immediately thereafter and looking at worries about, you know, the rats getting advantage of all the food being left around. But the fact of the matter is, in that zone where, you know, there was tremendous destruction, many of the rat colonies themselves did not survive. And so poison was put down as a public health prevention for any rat pockets that may have survived that event. But it's all about prevention. And so all that poisoning that went out was preventative to prevent any public health secondary issues.
So what can cities do to keep their rat populations under control? Is anything possible?
Yes, quite a bit is possible, in fact. And your show started off with, you know, Patty discussing the importance of considering this proactive inspector. And, you know, I saw this release when it came out, and I said, you know, bravo to Green Bay, because the whole key to preventing rats from becoming a massive problem in cities versus their presence is to be proactive. And proactive, of course, means someone is, you know, one step ahead of the rats moving into a park or a neighborhood or an alley. You know, to list those conditions, like, you may not have rats yet, but you do have the conditions that's going to cause them. So that's the smartest thing any city could do, whether it's New York or San Francisco or Chicago, is to have proactive observers out there looking for conditions that are going to cause rats and stop them before they begin.
Oh, so cities really do need to take that rat czar very seriously, that role very seriously.
You know, I couldn't agree strongly enough, Kate. That is it. And as people, you know, and in part, again, back to what Patty said, a lot of people are repulsed by rats. I mean, Patty stated it right out. She said, I hate rats. I don't like to see them, so forth and so on. That's the typical human response. And we're hardwired to be repulsed by snakes and rats and spiders for our own good. We know they can kill us. So most people do not want to think about rats. They don't want to think about cockroaches or pests. And as a result, when we're not looking at night, as it was said, these animals move in, and before we know it, because we're not proactively inspecting our own properties, these animals are multiplying. And then before we know it, we have a problem. And then we want to react with poisons or traps or something. You know, we need to be more proactive.
Let's go to Marcelo, who joins us from West Lima. Hi, Marcelo.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
I was just wondering if there's been any research done into some sort of food-based sterilization of rats.
Yes. Right now, I mean, it's a great question. And 30 years ago, there was a male contraceptive for the male rats that blocked the epididymis, you know, and sperm couldn't be transferred. That didn't quite work out. Within the past couple of years, and now there's a product that was just registered through the EPA a year or so ago called ContraPest, and that goes for the female mostly, and it causes infertility, premature infertility among the females. So that is now available, but I have to say, and we have hopes for those products for our future, that is still going through some real-world research tests. But it has been approved, it is now available, and now comes the real-world test. So we are moving in that direction. As a species, we now have a, quote, a fertility, anti-fertility agent for this species.
Yeah, well, what kind of methods would you need to go through to sterilize rats on the roam?
Well, it's these active ingredients that cause premature, you know, infertility are delivered through, you know, liquid baits right now, for example.
Yeah.
So these baits are put out in specialized bait boxes, and the rats that feed from those bait boxes drinking a liquid, and they get the active ingredient in that manner.
So what role can people play in keeping rat numbers down, whether it's in their communities or just in their own backyard around their home?
Yeah, that's the crux of the issue. It's, again, back to every person should ask how I do my garbage, how I do my trash, how I store the stuff in my backyard. Is there anything I am doing specifically that's going to feed a rat or give them, you know, harborage? Every person should ask that, especially, and I don't want to, you know, put the blame on any particular group, but especially those that generate lots of food waste. For example, obviously restaurants, supermarkets, you know, schools, any place that's generating lots and lots of trash. That trash has to be really well managed so that nothing can get into it easily. You know, your previous caller talked about plastic garbage cans. Well, if you have rats in an area and you're using plastic garbage cans, pretty predictable, those rats are going to go right through that plastic and have a nightly meal every single time.
So these rats, their jaws, their teeth are very strong. Is that right?
Tremendous. And in fact, you know, rats are rodents, and the word rodent translated means to gnaw, G-N-A-W. And they're equipped with very powerful incisors, whether they're squirrels or other rodents and chipmunks and, you know, woodchucks. They all have these very powerful incisors, and they can exert pressures of several thousand pounds per square inch. And so they can't go through metal for the most part, but they certainly go through plastics and wood and those types of things. Very powerful teeth.
Well, a lot of times people are repulsed by rats. They think they're gross. They spread disease. They carry a stigma. They perhaps have a PR problem. Is this all really bad news, or do we tend to overreact? Is there any good news about rats?
Well, it's a paradox. We can't have rats living close to us. That much we know because, you know, they may crawl out of a sewer and they're dragging that ugly tail behind them, so people think, and so you can see what's on the tail from the sewer, what's on the feet from the sewer. You know, they come from bad areas, and yes, so they can be elevators of diseases right out of that sewer onto somebody's steps of their home or a school, or the if they sneak in behind a door in a restaurant and run around, who knows what they're carrying. So that's the bad news with these rats. You know, the paradox is at the same time, we owe more thanks as a species, human beings, to the rat and mouse than any other mammal on the face of the earth, because we have studied these animals for our own welfare, for our own medicines, for our own understanding of how the body works. And so, you know, we have to love this animal in some ways, but at the same time, keep it away from us. So it's a paradox.
How big of a public health threat are rats?
Well, Kate, you know, the potential is the word, you know, the potential. So, you know, everyone thinks of the plague back in the medieval time where the rats were involved in killing millions. 25 million people died from the plague. I mean, that's incredible numbers. But these days, with antibiotics and at least improvements in sanitation and pest management professionals everywhere, you know, we've really reduced the public health threat from these animals. Now, we've reduced it. We haven't eliminated it. And papers have been published from Columbia University and other prestigious universities around the world that show they are still carrying pathogens, you know. So if we did a, say, we collected a 500 rats from Green Bay or Milwaukee or Madison, and we ran them through laboratory tests for pathogens, what would we find? And we'd likely find a portion of those rats are carrying things that can hurt us pretty severely.
Bobby Corrigan is with us, an urban rodentologist, a scientist. He's president of RMC Pest Management Consulting in New York. Getting your questions, your thoughts about rats at 800-642-1234. Let's go to John now, who joins us from Brown Deer. Hi, John.
Good morning, and thank you for accepting my call. And I have a question or a to discuss or a point to discuss with Dr. Corrigan.
Sure.
Many years ago, I bought a book titled "The Rat: A Study in Behavior," authored by S. A. Barnett, and I thought it might be an interesting read. And I purchased it at the Half Price Bookstore. And I read the book, and I found that it was totally, I was totally absorbed by it. It was probably one of the best behavioral studies that I've, of animal behavior that I've ever come across, although I'm not really interested in animal behavior. But I was fascinated by the depth and knowledge this particular author has of the rat, and he thoroughly explained laboratory rats and wild rats and behavior and their ethology and their reproductive habits, the psychology, their behavioral psychology, and so forth. And I was just wondering if Mr. Corrigan is familiar with this book, and if he is, has he read it?
John, thanks for the call.
Yes, so thanks, John. So yes, that book, which has been several editions, it was the very first book, you know, I studied in graduate school. It was the very first book I was given in graduate school by my major professor. And to this day, I'm constantly going back and rechecking and explicating information out of Tony Barnett. He goes by Tony Barnett. He's maybe, in my opinion, Dr. Rat of the world. And so he did it. He did it best. His behavioral book is used in many, many courses on animal behavior. And so very familiar with it. And one of the biggest contributions of all time to rat biology and rat behavior. So, yes.
So what do we need to know about rat behavior that can inform other aspects of animal behavior and lends itself to research?
Well, you know, the rat, as the years are going by, Kate, the research is coming in on rat behavior and advances in rat behavior. And what we're learning as human beings, we have really understood not only the rat, but many, many mammals. We only have an inkling of the complexity of behaviors. We just learned, for example, within the past 3 years that rats make decisions. They're capable of making decisions based on experience. That's what we do as human beings, and we thought we were the only ones that could do it. Not only that, but we now know that rats regret making bad decisions. A piece of research that just came out, and these are all credible research institutions and referee journals and so forth, and a research just came out a couple weeks ago showing that rats within their family units and their communities, they have communities just like us, they will barter with one another. One rat may bring a piece of food to another rat and in exchange get a back rub or get a cleaning to get rid of the bugs on its body. So those reveal to us, to your question, that we have a lot to learn from these animals. And by understanding the behavior, then we, as our behavior, can use that to keep our two species separate so we don't end up with health problems.
Let's go to Melissa, who joins us from Eau Claire with a question. Hi, Melissa. Go ahead.
Good morning. It's an interesting show, that's for sure. My question is, when humans dispose of a rat problem or rats, what are we supposed to do with their bodies? I mean, the pathogens would still be left in their bodies, and you wouldn't necessarily want to bury them or throw them in the garbage, would you? Or how would you want to dispose of them?
Great question, Melissa.
Yes, it is a great question. Typically, you know, the best way to handle any dead rats, say if someone has trapped a rat around their property or used some kind of a rat poison or something, or even the professionals, you know, when they kill rats, there are carcasses, and you're exactly right, you know. There could be fleas and ticks and lice in the fur, and there can be pathogens on the inside. So it is best to, you know, what I always advise, and is one is you follow the advice of the Center for Disease Control online. They are the where the buck stops on this question. However, it's usually one of being careful, disinfect the area without going crazy. For example, you could use ordinary disinfectant, spray the area where the rat is lying, leave that sit for a couple minutes, and then using a plastic bag over your hand, you know, you grab the carcass with your hand inside the plastic, as you put the rat inside the bag, you reinvert that bag, you tie it up, and it can be treated as normal garbage in those cases. And that's usually going to reduce the risk of us contacting any of their ectoparasites or diseases, and it goes through the garbage cycle pretty much. Other than that, if it's a large infestation, that's where professionals need to be consulted for collecting large amounts of animals and whether or not they're going to be incinerated and biohazards. And again, that's the questions that the disease experts usually online provide tips for.
Melissa, thanks. Let's go to Albert in Milwaukee. Hi, Albert.
Yes, hi. And the paper or magazines, you get these articles or little advertisements saying the humane way or to get rid of rodents and mice or mouse or rats with the electronic devices that somehow emit this magnetic wave that scares them away or whatever. Is that a bunch of hype? Is that true? Is there any merit in that?
Well, Albert, I would say this on you know, we all, when it comes to science and biological, whether it be you have a headache or, you know, you have a skin ailment or whatever it might be, or, you know, anything to do with biology and animals and animal behavior. Again, these are complex animals. So when someone has something that sounds just too good to be true and just too easy to use, you know, simply as plug it in and all your pest issues go away. I mean, you know, what you should do if you wanted to is do a little online research, especially by going to the .edu sites and ask those questions. But usually I always respond, if there's no sound science, scientific data to back up these claims from a credible, reputable researcher, buyer beware.
Well, Albert, thanks so much for calling in. Bobby Corrigan, any parting words for us as we explore this conversation? Anything else you'd like to add?
I guess not. I think your show really covered it very thoroughly, Kate. I applaud what Green Bay is thinking about doing. I applaud what, you know, was said, you know, by Patty. I think the bottom line is, you know, if there's rats, there's food. And that's on us as a species. Sometimes just look in the mirror and ask, am I doing anything to contribute to a rat problem?
Well, Bobby, thanks for spending time with us.
You bet. Thank you for having me.
Bobby Corrigan is an urban rodentologist, scientist, and president of RMC Pest Management Consulting in Westchester, New York. He was inducted into the Pest Management Hall of Fame a decade ago. You can follow him on Twitter at rodentologist. Continuing this conversation about rats, do you have one as a pet? If you do, tell us about it. What caused you to consider a pet as a rat? What questions do you have about caring for your pet rat or other questions about rodents? 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the rodent conversation in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. Rats happen to be thriving in cities where we humans provide an abundance of food and shelter. The weather, our climate is now also improving conditions for rat populations. But some people try to give their pet rat the finest accommodations year-round. We're moving on to talk about caring for rats here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You can join the discussion about rats at 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Grayson Doss is a clinical instructor in zoological medicine at UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. Grayson, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kate. Good morning. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, a lot of people get a bit freaked out about rats, but you're in the camp of being a fan of rats. What makes them so special?
I mean, years ago, I used to not be a fan. I was, just like everyone else, a little bit timid about them, but just spending time with them and having to work with people that are a little bit excited about rats, and that kind of changed my perspective and led me to kind of a healthy relationship with them. And they're actually just really interesting, inquisitive pets, and they can really interact with their caretakers, and just you can have a blast with them. And I think people unfortunately overlook that, and that's something that I've been talking with people throughout my career, kind of trying to get their perspective to change.
So is a rat a big mouse, or are there significant biological differences?
They, in a lot of ways, they're very similar to mice, at least anatomically and physiologically. But there are definitely differences in behavior as far as how they interact socially. So a lot of people think of them as just a little bit larger version of a mouse, but there are quite a few differences.
Like?
Socially, they interact in different groups. They also like to choose different nesting areas. Some they raise their young a little bit differently, and their habitats vary a little bit. So even though anatomically they look very similar, they are somewhat different.
And they can certainly have a lot of pups. Do they treat their young, or do they look after them?
They do, yeah. So they take care of them. A lot of pups, at least rats when they're born, are born hairless and blind, and so they kind of take care of them until they get on their feet, so to speak. And that's a little bit different than mice. Mice are born a little bit more. They speed up when they develop, and that's one way that rats are different than mice. But they do watch over them and make sure that they can handle it before they go out on their own.
How long do they typically live?
Rats, the average lifespan for a pet rat is about 2 to 3 years. And so you get a really good few years with them, but their lifespan is pretty short.
Let's go to Cynthia, who joins us from Menominee, who's been waiting. Hi, Cynthia. Thanks for waiting.
Oh, you're welcome. That's how important rats are to me.
Well, tell us your story.
I got hooked on rats because I have a pet snake and wouldn't eat anything but live rats. But I soon found out rats are very friendly. They get used to people right away. They're clean. I've had mice to feed my snake, and they're very smelly. But rats are very affectionate, and they're great conversation pieces, and I find them very soothing. Several years ago, when I worked in services for students with disabilities, we had a young man who suffered from anxiety. I said, you need a pet. He says, I can't have pets in my apartment. I said, what about a rat? It made the world of difference to him.
Well, Cynthia, thank you so much for sharing your story. So, Grayson, what kind of setup do you need at home for a pet rat?
When I talk to people who are considering bringing a pet rat into their home, we usually talk about enclosure, just what's your pet rat going to live in? And I usually recommend wire cages. You can also use glass aquariums, but wire cages have a little bit more ventilation, which kind of helps the rat breathe well and kind of keeps problems down in that way. So it's also a little bit easier to clean. But yeah, a wire enclosure is great. If you can get a multi-level enclosure, and that gives them some activity. They can do some climbing, they can do some exploring, and that provides some enrichment for them. So starting there, and then I usually talk to them about diet. So most of the diets out there are going to be, they have commercially available diets, which are well balanced for rats. And so that's a good place to start.
Are there any things from your refrigerator that you would want to give your pet rat, or is it all from the pet store in terms of the food?
I would say the rodent pellets, usually from the pet store, but definitely if you have fresh vegetables, you would prepare them just like you would for yourself, but that can provide a different food, you know, spicy peppers, cucumber, citrus. It's all something neat for them to try, and it's it can kind of vary the old boring pellets from day to day. So definitely if you have fresh veggies or fruits, that's something that you can give them in moderation.
Let's bring in Susan now, who is in Milwaukee. Go ahead, Susan. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. After hearing all the bad stuff about garbage rats and diseases, I wanted to tell about our pet rat that we had. I worked at the Children's Zoo where I first became acquainted with rats as pets.
Awesome.
And we bought a rat. And he was the special pet of one of my girls. He was affectionate and funny. The kids would stretch a rope from one to the other, and he'd walk the tightrope, and they would build mazes with their blocks with food at the end. And then they'd alter the maze after he'd learned it. And he just was such a fun pet.
Sure.
He was social, and he's lived in an aquarium, but he could knock the top off of it and go roaming around the house at will almost.
Nice.
And I would often find him in my daughter's room in the morning when I'd come in to wake her for school, and there he is with his head on the pillow right next to her. She was a special person, which sounds terrible unless you knew how ratty he was. And I'll tell you, when he died, he lived to almost 4 years.
Wow.
Which very long.
That's great.
I think we fed him well and loved him a lot.
Sure.
But when we buried him, I'll tell you, we grown-ups from the neighborhood came because she would take him out for walks with a little crocheted harness.
Oh my goodness.
On him and walk him up the sidewalk. And the grown-ups were even crying at his funeral.
Oh, well, Susan, wonderful story. Grayson, she's talking about building mazes.
Sure.
There. How smart are rats?
Rats are very intelligent. They, there's a reason that people have kind of used them to look at behavioral research for decades. I think we don't give them nearly the credit that they deserve as far as intelligence. A lot of pet rats can recognize their name. You can call them for treats. You can set them up mazes in the house for them to explore. So they are quite intelligent, even though they're so small. We overlook it, but they're really smart animals.
Susan, thanks. Let's go to Diane in Milwaukee with a question. Hi, Diane.
Hi, good morning. A very interesting conversation. My question is, the pathogens that rats carry and harm human beings, do they do the same thing to themselves? Do those pathogens harm or kill them?
Oh, that's a great question. Some of the pathogens that they can carry asymptomatically, and so they don't necessarily have to have any symptoms from them. And so that's why I always talk to people that are considering pet rats just take precautions and just use basic hygiene when you're taking care of your pet. So wash your hands, clean them up of any refuse with, just like you would with a dog or a cat, or any other pet. But they do have some pathogens that can affect them and not necessarily affect us. And so taking care of their health in a lot of ways helps prevent us from having issues or developing issues because we have pet rats. So starting with them, keeping them happy and healthy can help keep us healthy and make sure we don't get anything from them.
Diane, thanks. Let's go to Katrina in Appleton now. Hi, Katrina.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for taking my call. And my concern is, in this area, we have such a huge population of squirrels, every single kind of squirrel, and I just wondered if they would compete with the rats for habitat.
Hmm. Katrina, thanks.
That's a good question. In some ways, they could compete, but rats will, especially wild rats, will have a different area where they will set up versus squirrels. Squirrels are going to be a little bit more arboreal, so they're going to be more tree climbers, setting up nests in trees. But for sure, they're as far as food sources, they could overlap a little bit, but squirrels are going to fit more with vegetation or nut sources, whereas rats are going to be more around kind of human population areas.
What about getting more than one rat? Do they interact well with each other, or is that not a good idea?
No, rats are actually very social. So they do really well in small groups, even mixed gender groups. So that's a little bit different than mice. You have to be careful there. But for the most part, rats get along well. If you have two males, they may have a scuffle from time to time. Same with females. But they're not usually too aggressive towards each other, and they actually enjoy each other's company.
And what about veterinary care and rats?
I always talk to people just not only from the health standpoint for the rat, but also human health, is to just, I mentioned earlier, just be really careful when you're cleaning things. Just basic hygiene goes a long way. As far as veterinary care, I always recommend talking with your veterinarian when you're considering bringing a rat in. There are certain households where it would be a little bit, you have to be a little bit more cautious if you have really young children or people that have issues with their health. But otherwise, they make a great pet. And just starting early, reading some info, there are a lot of good sources online. But veterinarians can be a great place to start with how to best care for your pet and kind of incorporate them into your family.
And what if you already have a dog or a cat and you really want a rat? Is that not a good idea?
Not necessarily. They can actually get along quite well. I would say cats and dogs, once you've kind of introduced a rat into the home really carefully, they kind of become ambivalent about the rat there, and the rat may actually run the house to some degree. So just be really cautious when they're interacting. But we have a lot of clients that we know that have rats in cat and dog households, and they do quite well.
Have you seen over the years people coming around to rats? And do you have any, as we close here, any final words of wisdom for people who are considering a rat as a pet?
Sure. I definitely have seen more pet rats since I've been in this field. They've become more popular as pets, which I think is great. And I would encourage people to reconsider the stigma about pet rats. I think that's the biggest hurdle for coming to love them as pets. But if you interact with people, just like the callers in for the show, once you've interacted with them and seen how personable they are, how friendly, it's hard to turn that down as a potential pet. They're just great, great animals.
Well, Grayson, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a great time.
Grayson Doss is a clinical instructor in zoological medicine at UW-Madison School of Veterinary Medicine. Earlier, we talked with WPR's Green Bay-based reporter, Patty Murray, and urban rodentologist and pest management Hall of Famer, Bobby Corrigan. This hour was produced by Bill Martins, who did not rat around on this hour, and Keely Baltina with technical direction from Dean Kennetter. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This conversation comes to you on the Ideas Network.